welcome to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. I have a fabulous guest who I don't even know where she lives, but I've seen her film. She doesn't even know it. Christy Ferris is here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I really appreciate the interview.
Well, that's great. So I do some work. I just want to say I loved Amelie Victoria, which you don't even know I saw, but I did see it. So
you wonderful film.
Pardon?
You saw Amy Victoria?
I have. I loved it.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Thanks.
Absolutely wonderful. So if we could start there, what we just kick into with that to start and see how we go?
Yeah.
How was directing during COVID? I mean, you're an actor. You do voice work. And now you're a director. So how's doing your first project during COVID? Or was this your first project?
It was my first on-camera project, yes. I've directed musicals and so forth, but and plays, but nothing on camera. It was very interesting because not only did my friend say, hey, you know, I want you to direct this project, and I was like, okay, I don't know how we're going to do this during COVID, but how are we going to do this during COVID? So it was like, well, we're going to send everybody, you know, an iPhone and, you know, they'll have to have somebody in their house, help them to be the lighting, the camera person, the sound. So I was like, okay, great. Let's get the people who we think can do it. And then next thing you know, he's like, oh, and by the way, your two actresses are deaf. And I was like, wait, what? How am I going to direct two women that are deaf? Like, I don't speak the language. I don't do sign language. But so it was a challenge in that sense. But we made it work. And the two actresses, when they did it, they were not in the same place at the same time. So they never recorded at the same time. So we had to try to match it to make sure that the emotions and everything were the same on both sides.
Well, you did a wonderful job. I mean, everybody should check out this short. It is just beautiful to look at. I love the set design. It was probably amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I think you did a great job of framing things. And that's one thing I did notice. You had everybody almost always in the middle, which I kind of thought was very cute.
Oh.
And I kind of think you let the scene breathe that way. And I think that's what you were going for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't even know if I really paid that much attention to that. Now I want to go back and look.
Oh,
you know, I'm like, did I do that? You know, it was like telling, my main focus was telling the story, and also to show the transition from being mentally in chaos to having a type of conclusion and love at the very end. So I'll have to go back and watch that.
Oh, it's just a wonderful story. That's all I'm saying. So you did a great job.
No, awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
So I want to discuss Stepping the movie for a bit. I looked for a copy of this. I don't think one exists. I tried all the streaming. I did look pretty hard for this. I couldn't find it. So what did you do in Stepping? I was going to do a little more research.
Yeah, that's like one of those movies that, you know, you don't want people to talk about.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I saw James Avery. I'm like, I'm in. I'm watching this movie.
Yeah, it really wasn't well done, but it was a labor of love with friends and everybody. I mean, Anthony Anderson and Monique and James Avery and Miguel and Nunez. And
yeah, I had a great cast. So I'm like, I would watch this.
Incredible. Yeah, it was just the script wasn't the best. However, people really loved it. And I have mad love for my fans that are out there, who I call my friends, for loving the movie and loving what I did in the movie. And so ironically, the people that I met there, Wesley Jonathan, Karen Ward Ross, Darius McCrary, and myself, we all ended up on a TV show called Craig Ross Jr.'s Monogamy. So it all came full circle years later that we all worked together again.
So you're a very proactive podcaster yourself, I've noticed. I've watched a few of them.
Thanks.
How did you fall into that? Do you feel these issues weren't touched by other people and you feel you could give them a voice?
You it was very tricky, very hard. You know, my fan base is so diverse, right? You know, coming from Passions and Scrubs and, you know, so I have a very diverse group of people. And then Monogamy, which is on an African-American channel. It wasn't the easiest for me to do the podcast that's called This Week in Black People Shit, because I wasn't really sure how people were going to take it, because we really went there about racism, but we did it in a very clever, sarcastic way when I was just doing it by myself. And then we changed it into a three-man group. And it was ironic, because the week, and this is how I feel like God and the universe, and some people call it the universe, you know, how God works in my life, is that the week that we started doing the live podcast was the week that George Floyd was killed. So wow. I don't think it's a coincidence that he got killed, I think on that, I don't remember, like that Monday or that Sunday or something. And we did the podcast like that Wednesday. So I don't think it was a coincidence that we happened to do it, because it was a platform for people to talk about and express how they felt of something that was so tragic. And I don't think people realize when that happened, and then the marching, and then, you know, Black Lives Matter, and then now it's All Lives Matter. It, and then people asking you like, oh, wow, did that really happen to you? And is this what racism really is? It opened up a lot of wounds for a lot of people who are of color, because we've learned how to suppress all of that energy for so long that it finally got released and it sent a lot of us in depression on top of being COVID, like being a COVID. So it was a place for people to be able to express how they're really feeling and let out the sadness and the anger and the frustration that I think a lot of people have been going through. So it was a blessing.
Do you think your podcast has made you feel better about some topics to discuss them with other people?
I don't know if it made me happy, because the hard part about doing the podcast was we were doing topics that were trending for that week. And what ended up happening was every week somebody Black was getting killed. And it became a place of like, oh my God, we have to talk about this again. And then again, because it just kept happening. So I don't know if I can say that it did that, but it was a place that brought people a sense of community. And that's why I continue to do it as long as I did.
Now, on your YouTube, or I found a clip of you on YouTube, you go over a lot of things. I think it's about 3 to 5 minutes. Is that the real you?
I'm not sure what specifically.
It's you discussing. You say your name and you discuss everything you've been up to and this and that. You discuss dating. You discuss your podcast. You discuss your voice acting.
Oh.
And discuss your one woman show.
Oh, well, yeah, that's really me then.
Well, I guess it's like your sizzle reel, I guess. Maybe I should rephrase that.
Oh, I think I know which one you're talking about. And were there also videos and stuff like
yes.
that? And
yes.
Oh, yeah, that was me. That was me hosting my reel, which a lot of people, I mean, I haven't seen anybody do that before.
No, it was great. I loved it. It was so good.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I was like, hey, this is what's going on. I like to keep people, you know. I like to do things that are different that people aren't doing. And I love being an entertainer. I really do love what I do. I love bringing joy and I love bringing empathy and you know, make people think and so forth. So, yeah, so I did something unique and different and that's what I came up with.
It was good. How hard do you find it to join an already existing show as an actor, as a guest starring person?
It's not as, it can be difficult and yet it can be smooth sailing. It just depends on the actors. There's been a couple of shows that I've been on, and not that they weren't nice to me, because people can't necessarily be mean. You know, I'm too grown for that to happen, but you know, I'm like, yeah, no, that's not happening. But I've had people that have tried to tell me what to do, or, you know, like another actor, which I always think is strange, because I'm like, why would I not do what I did in my audition, what they hired me for? And sometimes I'm like, is it because you think it's going to upstage you? Like, I don't know. But, and I've had a couple of women that didn't like what I had on because I thought I was too pretty. So I did change clothes. So that's happened.
Really?
Oh yeah. That's happened far and few between. I've only had maybe 3 or 4 incidences in my 20 something years of doing this where I've had things like that happen. But for the most part, everybody on all of my shows that I've been on have been incredible. They've been nice. You know, I don't expect people to be my best friend, but I do appreciate when people take the time to say hello and make me feel like I'm a part of their production, because it's already nerve-wracking and you're trying to fit into their system and you're trying to figure it out and you only have a couple of minutes to figure it out. And how do they work? Do they work fast? Do they work slow? Do they do a couple of takes? Do they, you know, does the actor who's a series regular like to rehearse? Do they not like to rehearse? You know, it can be a little nerve-wracking, which is why as an actor, you always have to come like so overly prepared, so that if the nerves do come up, you're not worried about your lines. You're able to focus on the job. And, you know, people like Billy Bob Thornton and Zach Braff and, you know, Donald Faison. And I mean, just all these different people were always so kind to me, and I'm always appreciative. So.
So I was going back. You've been in the business over 20 years. You still have nervousness?
No, not in that sense. No, I'm just, let's say for instance, you're on set and, you know, things get changed around and then all of a sudden, like, oh, we're going to change all of this up and we're going to do it this way. You know, your nerves are on high. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh my God, okay. I got to make this adjustment. How do I do this? And yeah, so you can get nervous in that sense, but no, I won't say that I never get nervous. If I'm doing live theater or I'm doing something, there's always still a little bit of excitement, but I don't necessarily call it like fear. I just call it, like, I just tell myself that it's the same feeling in the body. Fear is the same feeling in the body as excitement. So I'm just like, hey, Chrissy, you're excited. So, okay. So I just remind myself I'm excited. But yeah, I mean, don't get it twisted. We all still get nervous, you know?
I want to get into your one woman show. I couldn't find a lot on it. So could you tell me a bit about it and how did you come to write it? Why did you write it? Where you've performed it? How long is it?
Well, first of all, you're amazing because you do a lot of great research. So I'm so appreciative. Cause you know, sometimes I do these interviews and I talk about the same thing over and over again. So you're like diving deep. So I appreciate it.
I want to discuss you. I can discuss Scrubs if you want, but I don't think that would be interesting. What I want to discuss, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I'm more interested in you.
No, I love it. In Search of O is about waiting until marriage at 27 to have sex and the fantasy versus the reality of that experience. And so, it's about me waiting until marriage and then having this failed marriage, like, and getting a divorce, like, right away. And it ended up becoming this really incredible story that I remember the first time that I did it, I was so surprised that people laughed so hard and then cried at the end. And I remember thinking, oh my God, they got it. You know, it was incredible. It was a great experience. So I'm hoping to be able to put that back up again when time permits. We're allowed to go back into the theater, you know?
Well, I think you're getting close now. Or you could even film it and send it to short film festivals so people like me could see it.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I could send that as a film festival. Yeah, let me think about that.
So when you're sitting there and it's just you, I mean, do you field audience questions at times or you're done? Once a woman shows over, you say, thank you, goodbye, thank you for listening to me.
Wait, ask the question one more time.
Do you get questions at the end of your one-woman show? Do you take questions from the audience?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, occasionally. Occasionally. It depends on where I'm performing. If it's a festival and stuff, maybe not so much. But I have done questions and answers afterwards for sure, yes.
Now, to me, that would be one nerve-wracking experience at times.
It's not as difficult for me just because I'm a little more transparent about, you know, I mean, that whole thing is about transparency. It's like pretty much based on my life. So, yeah, I mean, I shouldn't be afraid to say anything after I just expose myself and try to have an orgasm on like my first time having sex on stage. I mean, it's like all these different things that happens in this piece. So, yeah, it's not so bad.
Are rom-coms your favorite roles?
I love romantic comedies. Like when people ask me like, oh, who would you like to be? Or what's your style? I always say, think Sandra Bullock with a Halle Berry face. So I would love to do more rom-coms.
Well, being an actor and being already a director, I mean, couldn't you just write yourself one? I guess is what I'm thinking.
I could, but I'm going to be honest. I have been so busy working that sitting down to write a script has been extremely challenging to be able to do. So yeah, it makes it a little bit more difficult, but I did write the one woman show. So I guess you're right. I could sit down and make it happen. But at that time, yeah.
So, and other things also, you do a lot of voice work, which always impresses me. The ability of anyone to use 50 different voices. Obviously it's your same voice, but you can go high, low, be 12, be 45, be 25, and you can do everything. Now, how much fun is that?
Oh man, it's so incredible because you get to be someone else and you're not worried about what you look like. Everything is in your voice, you know, and which is not easy. A lot of people think it's easy. People think it's easy to act, but it's really not. Like to take a script and actually try to act it out, it's not as simple as you think. But doing voiceover acting and being able to convey what's happening through your voice is a whole nother beast as well. And you need training to be able to do both of them. So I had to start training. I had to start training to learn that. But it's incredible. And so I do, you know, I do voiceover work a couple times a week.
Now, I was reading you had to build your own studio. Now, where did you find plans for that? Or did you have friends that helped you out? Or you did some research? I mean, that's a lot of work.
Well, you know, when the pandemic hit, I had to ask myself, what am I going to do to make money? Like, that was the first thing I asked myself. The second thing I asked myself, what new skill do I want to learn? Because I do not want to come out of this pandemic not learned anything. So I did research And I ended up, I was going to buy this, you know, studio, like it's called like LA Booths. And there's a couple of other ones that, you know, people make. And I ended up going, cause I have like this incredible luck. Like when I was a kid, if I needed to find like $100 bill on the ground, I would find like $100 bill. Like I'm like that girl, right? That's like, okay, I want to make this amount of money this week or this month. And then like jobs will pop up. Like, you know, like I have this like crazy, crazy luck. And so, so I went on Craigslist and I found this incredible booth that I'm looking at right now. And he was only selling it for $1,800 because he was moving to Singapore. He's like, hey, I'm moving to Singapore. I just need to get this out. But all of the ones that I was going to buy online that is like this particular one was about $6,000 to $9,000.
Wow.
Yeah. But I got it on Craigslist for $1,800. So.
That's great. So.
Oh, no, it's amazing.
I know you love doing your network. I mean, I know that's the paying jobs, but do you feel yourself looking in the future as a independent director in the future? Do you have more independent projects coming up, or do you feel you're too busy with your voice acting and your network gigs to be able to go back to that?
That's a great question. Oh, I just want to add something to what I was going to say about the booth. The main reason why I bought the booth is because I was like, I'm going to learn how to do more voiceover stuff. And so I started taking classes so that I could actually use it. And I booked my first job doing a different, there's like 13 different voiceover. Probably and I first job in the first 4 months. Yeah. Well, I'm actually creating a show right now that I'm producing. It's a kind of social awareness, social conscious type show that I'm producing. And you know, walk a mile in their shoes. And it's just about having empathy for other people. So, it's a little scary just because it's like, oh, well, people want to watch something like this. I know I would, you know, but will other people want to watch feel good type shows? And so that's what I'm working on. So I am in the producing and hosting and other things like that. And I'm also creating a website for actors that's going to help them with their auditions and so forth. So I have other projects that are happening. As far as directing, I definitely want to direct again and more. It is a goal. I just, because I'm creating these other two projects and I'm still working on the voiceover to become a master at it to where I don't have to think about it. Like I could just go into the booth and do things like right away, book it and then keep moving. Once I become a master at that or a good pro at least, then I'll start stepping into an understanding more about directing because, you know, I thought I would have won on my first try of doing something like this. So, yeah.
Now you're saying about good feeling things. I think we don't have enough of those. When I was a kid, they existed. I mean, I would say Family Matters is one of those shows I always have a good laugh during. I mean, Full House and all those shows, they don't seem to exist anymore nowadays. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. Put it on. I mean, yeah. I think comedy is a lost art if that's what you're going for.
Yeah, no, it's more like a talk show kind of thing. More like a talk show, feel good kind of thing. So a little bit different, but
Don't have any talk shows anymore. I mean, even those are all becoming very bland, I would say.
Yeah. So we'll. I'm working on it. It's going to take a couple of months. I'm still in the beginning stages, planning in between jobs. But yeah, look for something. Hopefully by the end of the year.
Now, you did mention to me that you're just inventing a website to help people with auditions. Mm-hmm. Now, when you first started out, did you find auditioning difficult to get to the point you are now?
Well, auditioning is always a little difficult because, and this is what the website is creating, is understanding who you're auditioning for and what is their rhythm and their genre. Because you could be funny, but if the show is like not sitcom funny, but 1 hour or half hour single camera comedy, you're not going to get the job. Which is also different from Nickelodeon, which is also different from Disney. Like, they're all different types of comedies. And then there's dramedies, which is a different type of comedy. So if you don't understand that world, you can be the best actor in the world, but you're not going to book the job. And so, so it's important for you to understand the different types of genres. And that's what I hope that the website and so forth will do for actors, to help them to have more knowledge. The more knowledge you have, I think the better chance you have.
Now, I did see you were on Cameo, so I'm dying to know, do you get fun cameos, or is it just more like happy birthday things?
I get different stuff. Definitely happy birthday stuff. I get people who, you know, want me to give a shout out to their family members because they were big Scrubs or Passion fans. I get a range. Some people are like, hey, can you promote my business? I'm like, oh, sure. Okay. You know what I mean? You know, so I get a lot of different types, but mostly people who are fans of the different shows that I've been on.
Does that make you feel good that you have such a nice body at work that people remember you from Moesha, Sister Sister, Passions, and Stepping?
It's always nice to be appreciated. I mean, I don't even care if you've never been on TV, you're not an actor, and you're a mom and you're a wife, or you're a dad and, you know, a husband. It's always nice to be appreciated, especially for your talents. So I'm always in awe when people acknowledge the work that I do, because there's so many channels. And trust me, I remember one time I was being a little, I'm going to over-exaggerate, but I was like, I remember these girls came up to me and I was in Miami. They were like, oh my God, I know you. I know you. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm an actor. And they were like, oh no, I know. I'm trying to think of what it was. I was like, oh, it was probably Passions. And they were like, oh God, no, we hate that show. That show was horrible. And so I was like, oh, so now trust and believe. I never throw out the shows. I never think that it's going to be this. And it happened to be the other shows, because I did a lot of sitcoms and stuff. You know, we figured out what it was, but I just never assumed that people know that I was on Scrubs or that I was on Goliath, you know what I mean? Or Monogamy. Like, I don't expect people to know that I've been on these shows. So most of the time I kind of let them guess, because you can't assume anything, because I have been, as back in the day when they'd be like, I've been molded. Like, you just got molded. She didn't even know who you were from that show. She said that show was horrible, you know? So, yeah. But it is always nice to be appreciated.
Okay. Continuing on. I tried to find something in your singing career, and I have to apologize. I could not. So what happened to your singing career? I'm going to ask.
You know, again, I always thought I was going to be the singer. Like, I just was, I'm going to be a singer. But my acting jumped off so quickly, and my management team just didn't know how to help promote. And because I was so busy working, it kind of just fell to the wayside. Now, I was still doing musicals and stuff like that, and different plays and musicals and stuff like that locally, but nothing nationally. And then after you stop using your talents, you know, it kind of goes away. Although I can still sing, it's definitely not like it was back in the day. So.
Okay. I'm almost going to let you go. I just have a few fun questions for you, which I do for everybody that comes on the show. The first one's always the same. Your favorite film, please.
Love and Basketball. Can I give you two?
Of course.
Totally different genres. Love and Basketball and The Godfather.
I've seen both, so that's fine. One show you have not guest starred, but you will be, we know we'll be seeing you on in the future.
Because I love to manifest things. I love Law and Order, SVU. SVU. Yeah, Special Victims. Now, I'm doing voiceover work on it, so I'm one step closer.
Oh, you're close. That's really close.
Voiceover on it now, so it's like I did like the 500th episode. I was like, it's about time I'm finally on this show. But I watch that show every freaking Saturday, all day long.
So you should be able to get there. You're very close now.
I know. I'm close.
Okay, my final question is. Is there, sorry, you're making me laugh on the SVU, but I can't even ask my father. Your favorite meal?
My favorite meal? Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm a sister. I'm a black girl. I love soul food.
Nothing wrong with that. I enjoy soul food.
I love barbecue. I want some greens, some yams. I want some sweet cornbread, and I want a pound cake, a homemade pound cake that's made with butter.
I'm on board wherever you're going. I'm following you there.
That's my Aunt Darlene's house. I'm like, I'm going to my Aunt Darlene's house.
Last thing, please, everybody can find you at your website, your socials, whatever you want to give out.
I mean, they can find me on my socials, which is just Christy Ferris. I mean, should I spell it? I don't know.
No.
Spell it differently. Yeah. So
just like, Google it, people. You'll find it. It's easy.
You'll see the name in this interview at the bottom because it's there.
You will. Yes. Thank you for your time and have a great night.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.